The conversation continues with James Freeman on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Hello and welcome to today's show and the start of another week here on the Freeman Report. And as we like to do from time to time at TNT, we are mixing things up a bit from today. As starting from today, the Freeman Report will go out from 1 till 2 p.m. London time, which is 10 to 11 p.m. Brisbane time, and 8 till 9 a.m. New York time. What? I hear you say just 1 hour of the Freeman Report a day. Well, yes, but you'll be pleased to hear that on Tuesdays and Thursdays in the hour preceding the show, I will join Rick Munn from TNT's Locked and Loaded on a new panel show called Muckrakers. Rick and I have been told to release the attack dogs and go for hell for leather on this show. Not that that'll be a problem for either of us to do. I appeared on Locked and Loaded many times before, before getting my own show, but I was always the one being interviewed. So this is going to be wild with me and Rick both giving our strong opinions, something we're not afraid to do. So it is time to release the hounds on Muckrakers. Right, now back to today's show, because it is a huge day for news in the UK and internationally as well, because hundreds of protesters have gathered at London's High Court today to hear the judgment on the WikiLeaks founder, Julian Assange, and if he will be extradited to the United States. Now, the news that's come through literally in the past 10 minutes is that the two judges ruling on the case have declared that they are not satisfied by the US assurances and that Assange has been granted leave for appeal. It is a win of sorts, I guess, because it means he gets to appeal whether he'll get extradited. This was just to find out if he actually had the right to appeal it. So this is not game over. This is just one battle in a long war. But what it does mean is that Julian Assange will not be extradited imminently to the US, which is clearly amazing news. Because while this case is about freedom of the press, it is also a personal story about a man who's been locked up with no charges brought against him for merely reporting on war crimes committed by the United States. Something that we're told only happens in countries like North Korea and China and Russia, where vans turn up in the middle of the night, apparently, and take people off, never to be seen again. But we're told, I've grown up being told, that that never happens in the West. We fight for truth and justice here. So this is great news for Assange and for freedom of the press. So to talk about all of the news, this great news today, I'll be joined by the director of the Trust for Julian Assange in the second part of today's hour. Kim is an Australian filmmaker, poet and songwriter and is the founder of Films for Change. But to kick the hour off, I'll be speaking with author of The Last Best Hope, A History of American Realism, John Hulsman. John is also the president and managing partner of John C. Hulsman Enterprises, a prominent global political risk consulting firm. Now, that's not the only big story today. There's a few big stories today. One of them that I haven't really had much time to read up on yet, because it is just literally breaking. Of course, we know about the story in the UK, the publication of the report following the inquiry into the infected blood scandal. This will report on the details about how 30,000 haemophiliacs and transfusion recipients were infected with HIV and or hepatitis C over more than two decades. Personally, I find it very interesting that these two events, i.e. the Julian Assange ruling and the infected blood inquiry publication, have both been put on the same day. In my view, this is a nice convenient out for the legacy press to make sure that not too much focus is given to the Assange case. Because while the Assange story is an international news story, it is very much a story about British justice or the lack of it. So very, very interesting that there is another big story coming from the British establishment today. The other story, which has broken in the last sort of half an hour or so, is the fact that the ICC, the International Criminal Court, has put out an arrest warrant for the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, as well as for the leader of Hamas. Really, really interesting. And it's been a very, very busy day so far for all for news across the world. So we are going to go over to our UK news correspondent in a moment, Gemma Cooper, for the latest on all of the events today, although they are moving very, very quickly. If you want to get in touch about the show, please email me at jamesfreeman@tntradio.live. And if you feel like you want to give us your opinion on any of these stories and have a chat with other TNT Radio listeners, then head over to tntradio.live and click on the chat icon to join the live chat. My name is James Freeman, and this is the Freeman Report for today's News Talk, TNT.
It's the stuff.
What citizen wouldn't want to make American great again?
People are talking about.
It's vilifying MAGA. It's just not going to work.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Well, 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 Gemma, it is difficult to keep a pace with all of the things that are happening today. So I hand the challenge over to you.
It's a huge news day, James. In fact, I think since in my almost 8 months here at TNT, I've never done three such big breaking stories at the top of 1 hour. I mean, of course, massively jubilant scenes outside the High Court in London with the news that Assange has won his right to appeal against the extradition request. Obviously, that means another appeal now. So his team will have to mount that appeal. It's not over, not by a long way, as you said, but it is a step in the right direction. And the judges didn't for 1 minute believe the assurances given by the US government that they, you know, we'll look after him, just hand him over, it'll be okay. No, they saw through that legal argument. It was hardly any legal argument to stand on. They kept using his nationality and all sorts of other conditions like, well, we could use the First Amendment, but we could use this, but he's Australian, but this, but that. It became very obvious that no assurances were being given. It's a great day for the Assange team, at least a step in the right direction. We do have the actual results now of the long-awaited four-year inquiry into the infected blood scandal. That's published at 12:30 today, as you rightly say, coinciding with the Assange, almost on the dot, actually, of the Assange victory. Yeah. Almost at the same time, you know. It's very suspect. But I mean, the results of this inquiry are horrifying. And that's not my words. That's the chair and the author of the inquiry, Sir Brian Langstuff. He said that the authorities knew about the infected blood. They covered up the scandal. They withheld the truth from families. They told them half lies, half truths, even sometimes as to whether or not people were infected with HIV or hepatitis C from cheap blood, much of it bought from overseas from drug users and prison inmates. He says it's an absolute travesty. Patient safety was never part of the decision-making process, or paramount, unacceptable risks. It's a huge report. There's a lot to chew over in that. I just wonder if we'll be seeing a similar report in decades' time about the experimental jabs that were foisted on all of us. And also, as you rightly say, the chief prosecutor at the International Criminal Court is seeking arrest warrants against the Israeli leader Benjamin Netanyahu and his defense minister, and also the Hamas leader, the Hamas military chief, and the leader of the Hamas Politics Bureau as well. Karim Khan, KC, the ICC prosecutor, has requested the arrest warrants. It will now go before a panel of International Criminal Court judges who will consider the application for the arrest warrant. So they haven't been granted yet, but the application has gone in.
Right, just shows you, obviously, I was just quickly scanning that before I came on air. I thought they'd actually put them out. But this is a good move, I guess. And I think it was important to do to put a stamp on the independence of the ICC, particularly after those senators, I think there were seven senators that basically wrote a public letter threatening the ICC officials and their family members. And they said, if you put these arrest warrants out, we will bring sanctions and, you know, and we will come for your family members and you. Pretty despicable, really. So I think it was important that the court goes in this direction, because otherwise, what is the point in an international criminal court if it bows down to senators in the US? And of course, that followed, didn't it? That was actually on request of Benjamin Netanyahu, who called on Joe Biden publicly to sort this problem out and make it go away. I can't remember his exact words, but that was kind of what he was saying. On the Assange thing, Gemma, I know that people are celebrating and it's, you know, being presented as great news, but it is just another step in this process. And you could argue that actually the process is the punishment. Now we're going to have a whole appeal trial. This could just be the US kicking it into the long grass until after the election this year. I think that's highly likely. So, you know, this isn't necessarily as great news as, I mean, it's good news imminently because it means Julian Assange doesn't get shipped off to America right now. But, you know, I think time will tell because this still could go in the wrong direction. And of course, you know, we've heard how Julian Assange, what his health is like, what his mental health is like. So this is just furthering the sentence, his sentence in Belmarsh prison.
It is, but you're quite right to say also that, you know, he could have been put on a plane and been out of the country within 24 hours back to America. And then, you know, some suspicious Jeffrey Epstein-esque kind of, you know, death kind of occurring. It was not beyond the realms of most people's minds thinking that would happen if he went back there. So we have to take a victory where we can. His team will now mount this appeal hearing. Yes, it will take its toll further. But I think, you know, given that this has dragged along for so long, I mean, TNT was outside the Royal Courts of Justice and the original hearing back in February. I do think that they will be buoyed by this. I think everyone does realise it is justice in the right direction and not justice with corrupt courts, you know, all in cahoots with each other. And you know, there may be success with this appeal. There were so many holes in the US defense. There was hardly any kind of case they had at all. And the judges saw that. They will have to, you know, also mount another case against him. It's going to, I get what you're saying. It's going to go on and on and on, but at least this is on in the right way now. I think that's what we'll take. We haven't heard from Stella Assange just yet. Well, not before I came on air anyway, but it'd be interesting to see what she has to say as the story was breaking and the legal team was still inside the Royal Courts of Justice.
Yeah. Definitely. Gemma, we're going to take you will be aware of this yet. We're going to take a short break and then we're going to come back to you if that's okay, Gemma. We can talk about this infected blood scandal a little bit. We're just trying to get hold of John Holzman. Apparently he got his times confused. I guess this happens on live shows, doesn't it? But we're trying to get hold of him at the moment. But in the meantime, we're going to take a short break now and then we're back. Me and Gemma will be back to discuss some of the top stories of today. Right here on TNT.
TNT's David Curtin.
If this thing gets passed by the 194 members of the World Health Organization, it's going to bring in the power for them to declare an emergency and enforce lockdowns on all of their members, coerced injections, which goes against bodily autonomy, removal of people from their homes, imprisonment in quarantine camps for your safety, of course, and travel restrictions with vaccine passports, more draconian than we saw in the first lockdown, along with digital identities where you will have to prove your vaccination status and probably whether or not you've said anything which they declare to be misinformation.
David Curtin on today's News Talk, TNT.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. The benefits of advertising on today's News Talk, TNT Radio, should be clear to businesses of any shape or size. It can be accessed anywhere, anytime, by anybody, and is the perfect way to build brand awareness and stimulate digital activity. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
The top of the hour, we'll keep on top of the news.
It's the most important thing we can do.
On today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Well, I'm delighted that Gemma agreed. Well, she didn't really have a choice because I announced it on air, did I? But Gemma's going to stay with me for the next few minutes. We're going to talk more about these leading news stories and put them in context, give our opinion. But also, I'm going to ask Gemma for her opinion on the AstraZeneca interview that I did with Ahmed Malik. Obviously, I'll set that out in a moment because that has gone viral over the weekend. So, Gemma, tell us more about the infected blood scandal. What are your thoughts on it more generally?
Well, I think a lot of people, this is a story, we knew the report was going to be published today at 12:30 UK time. And there was some discussion on other TNT shows about this here in the UK this morning. And, you know, many people here at the station, many listeners, viewers feel that this is what we will be seeing about the vaccine harms in 30, 40 years time. This is a campaign that's been ongoing about tainted and contaminated blood that was given to haemophiliac patients, people that lost blood in childbirth, people that had blood transfusions because of accidents, all kinds of things, where people were given blood that was infected with either HIV or hepatitis C, and much of it had come from prisoners abroad in America, cheap blood, effectively. And the results today of the inquiry are damning. Sir Brian Langstaff, the chair of the report, has said the authorities knew all about this. They knew the blood was infected. They covered it up. They lied. They didn't take adequate safety procedures, unacceptable risks, a list of unacceptable risks a few we can go into. It just has vax damage written all over it in terms of what we were told over the last 4 years. This is safe. This is fine. Just take it. Just take it. It's the best available treatment. That's exactly what these poor patients were told in the 70s and 80s. And it ruined lives. And many of the 30,000 people are now dead. 10% of the people that got contaminated blood have since died. It just has medical corruption written all over it. And the NHS, doctors, nurses, medical professionals, patient safety at the bottom of the list, James.
Yeah. I mean, it is slightly different than the Max story, though, isn't it? Because there's a lot more people who are aware of the harms that have been done by the jabs. You know, even if the mainstream, the legacy press, if you were, and politicians are not talking about it, I'd be surprised. I mean, I would have thought that we either get justice, you know, within, I don't know, it's got to be a 5-year span, or we don't get justice at all. Because I think with the infected blood, and correct me if I'm wrong, scandal, that was a story which was really not that well known over the past few decades. It hasn't really been in the public's mind, even if it has been reported on. Whereas, you know, and ironically, the jabs and the harms that they've done haven't been reported on. But I would suggest probably millions of people around the world know about it. So do you really think it will take that long, the same similar time, to actually get justice? I would suggest we either get justice in a shorter period, or we just don't get any justice at all.
Well, to get justice, you have to take a case to court, which is happening in the UK with the High Court, AstraZeneca, you know, under the UK Consumer Protection Act. But don't forget, several families have dropped out of that now because of the risk that they could be liable for legal costs because of a technicality that there were risks on a patient's safety leaflet. That's how AstraZeneca have got off that. And it's so difficult to get justice because you have to prove that the harm was done in the first place. I do think if social media had existed at the time of the blood scandal, people would have got together more. They would have been able to talk to each other and form, you know, stronger connections. And I think social media has played a large part for those suffering from vaccine damage. People are talking to each other. But vax damage is not represented in the mainstream, and the infected blood scandal was ignored by the mainstream. It's just taken years of these families fighting. And that's why I think it'd be difficult for vax injured. You've got to prove it. You've got to prove it. It's got to go to court.
And the difference is we've got a COVID inquiry. Everyone knows it's a sham and that it's not answering the questions that need to be answered. But presumably what will happen is that will conclude with some, you know, ridiculous, misleading conclusions to it. And then that'll be it. The politicians will draw a line under it and say, no, we've had the COVID inquiry. We're not going to hold another public inquiry, because we haven't had that with the this is the first time we've actually had a public inquiry on the infected blood scandal, isn't it?
It is, and it's largely due to the campaigning group, the strength of feeling and the friendships that have been formed amongst the campaigners. The campaign group is called Tainted Blood, and the chair of that campaign was a haemophiliac little boy given blood infected with Hep C, hepatitis C. And he said, you know, the scale of lies and deception and gaslighting that all of them in the campaign group were subjected to, and it's taken years and years and years of them just not giving up and fighting away. And, you know, I just think for the people who suffered vaccine injury, vaccine harms, vaccine damage, and death, it's going to be a similar slog for justice, because like you say, the COVID inquiry is here. You say the magic word inquiry and everyone thinks, oh, that's all been resolved now. It's all been sorted out. But it hasn't. And the legacy media, the old media, willfully ignoring the story of vax damage, like they did the blood scandal. Nobody wanted to touch it. It's people power that's won this, nothing more. And I just fear in 30 years' time, we'll be looking at a very similar story with regard to the vax damage.
Yeah, I mean, the legacy press are starting to report on it. You see in the Daily Mail, which I guess, you know, Mail Online, that arguably is one of the biggest. Well, I think the Mail Online is the biggest publication in the world in terms of readership. They are starting to report on some of these stories, but it's still being couched in the kind of rare language. And the other thing that's really important, and this, Gemma, is where that interview with Dr. Ahmed Malik comes in. They are making AstraZeneca the fall guy, you know, the patsy for the mRNA jabs. Obviously, it was based upon a different technology. So they're kind of admitting that, yes, potentially killed 80 people in the UK, but, you know, you'll never prove that. So it's an uncertainty. And it was still rare. All so they can protect these mRNA jabs. And that is the big story about the Ahmed Malik interview, Gemma, because that went viral over the weekend. And if you haven't seen it, by the way, and you're watching this, you can go back on tntradio.live and rewatch that interview, or go to the app and rewatch that interview. It has gone viral because what it looks like has happened is the British government and AstraZeneca have used a limited hangout to hide all of this, because AstraZeneca obviously requested that the worldwide licenses are removed from the jab, which means now it's not a licensed drug. The regulators can just ignore it. It's gone away. They don't have to scrutinize it anymore. Now, the reason this has happened is not because of commercial reasons. There's no demand like the British government is trying to say, and others. No, there was a long-term clinical trial, the results of which were published in March this year. And they are absolutely damning. 11% of those who took part in the trial had severe adverse events. It really is damning, Gemma. And what's even worse, there were a few twists and turns, as Eden Bieber, who first revealed it on this show, and Ahmed Malik, who'd been going over the detail, there's been a few twists and turns, because originally they thought all of the harms were being done by the AstraZeneca jab. But it turns out that in the period when the trial started to when it ended, AstraZeneca, they stopped giving it out. And a lot of the harms that were shown in this trial happened a year after the trial started. So it actually turns out that they were given Pfizer and Moderna boosters after getting the initial AstraZeneca jab. So this is a real scandal, and they're trying to cover it up because they're saying, look, this is your story to the general public. You know, AstraZeneca's removed it, maybe linked to 80 deaths, but it was actually withdrawn in the end because of commercial reasons, because it was still rare. You know, lots of uncertainty. So the whole story goes away. A lot of the freedom movement think they got their story and they're jumping up and down, whilst actually the truth, and this is how a limited hangout works, the real truth of the story, which is this clinical trial data, no one ever becomes aware of it because it all just goes away. What are your thoughts on that, Gemma?
Well, my initial thought is I need to watch that interview from Friday, because I was otherwise engaged on Friday while that interview was going on. And that is one on my watch list, so I can like get properly genned up on that, because, of course, that is absolutely astounding revelations and makes complete sense. And I'm not surprised that that's gone viral. Let's hope it keeps, you know, traveling. Share it. You know, I only dip in and out of X for research purposes, but even I might share, not that anyone's following me, but I'll share it with whoever I can. I'll just tell everybody, James, you know, good old word of mouth when people start bringing up the dreaded V word.
Because, Gemma, once you start doing the maths, 11%, and like I said, they've purposely muddied, they wrecked their own trial, clinical trial, because, you know, they introduced these other two vaccines. And so the whole thing is a mess. It's very, very difficult to get some proper conclusions from which jab caused what and whatever. But I think that, you know, the summary is 11% of people who were on that trial had severe adverse events. You know, not minor events, not a sore arm, There's pericarditis, myocarditis, lots of other strokes, lots of other serious adverse events, life-changing in many cases. So it is really damning. So if you are watching this and you haven't seen that interview yet, please do get tntradio.live and go back and watch it and then share the hell out of it, because people need to be aware of this. Because like I said, once you start doing the maths, 11% of all the people who took it potentially having severe adverse events, well, then we're talking about millions of people, literally millions. And that's just the AstraZeneca jab, you know? We've got the Moderna and Pfizer jabs as well, which have been rolled out globally as well. So this is a huge story. I've taken a bit of flak from some people because I said that this is the biggest story this year so far. I still stand by that. I think it is, because we're talking about the deaths and mutilation, some people have been disabled, of millions of people globally. I think this is the biggest story of this year so far, and we broke it right here on TNT. Right, Gemma, thank you so much for covering for that 10 minutes. Some really good conversation there. I'll be speaking with you again tomorrow on the Freeman Report. To the rest of you, don't go anywhere, because after this short break, Basil Valentine will be joining me to talk about the biggest stories of today. So stay right where you are, right here on TNT.
I got news for you.
TNT Radio News.
It's about time.
Matt Boyland here with a quick look at your TNT headlines. Iran's President Ibrahim Raisi, together with the country's foreign minister, have been killed in a helicopter crash in the country's northwest. Former US Undersecretary of State Victoria Nuland is now calling for Washington to help Ukraine strike military bases inside of Russia. And Israel's war cabinet minister has threatened to lead a rebellion against the government if Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu fails to adopt his post-war plan.
Are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio?
Do you think we're doing a good job?
Then please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab, or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's news talk, TNT Radio.
Right now, my guest, John Holzman, I think he got his times confused, so we'll have to reschedule with him. But hey, it's good news, because it means the fabulous Basil Valentine, TNT's political editor, is with me now to talk about probably, I think, one of the biggest stories today. Obviously, there are a lot of big stories today, but this is potentially huge. The ICC potentially taking forward arrest warrants for the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, and the leader of Hamas. To talk about all of that, welcome to the Freeman Report once again, Basil.
Good afternoon, James, and hello to our viewers and listeners all around the world. It's great to be with you.
So, Basil, I mean, this broke just before I came on air. I actually initially thought that this was the ICC actually deploying the arrest warrants themselves. I think it's more a process. They're taking it forward now. Tell us about the, because I haven't had much time to read up on this. Tell us about this story, Basil.
Well, this is a hugely significant development. That's the first thing we should say. The chief prosecutor of the International Criminal Court. Now, that's not the body to which South Africa has been making its case that Israel is committing genocide. That's the International Court of Justice. These are two quite separate bodies with different legal processes. The International Court of Justice deals with countries, with nation states, hence South Africa, now supported by an increasing number of other countries, is taking Israel to court for genocide. And there were emergency hearings there towards the end of last week. We should get the result of those any time. The South Africans are seeking effectively an injunction from the ICJ to stop any further military action in Rafah, because they say it breaks the conditions that were set back in January. Now, the ICC, the International Criminal Court, which has the power to prosecute individuals, that has set its sights on Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his defense minister Yoav Gallant. Until very recently, it was felt by a lot of people, both independent observers and on the Palestinian side that the ICC was sitting on its hands, that Karim Khan was compromised in some way. He was very much the choice of the United Kingdom and the United States at the time of his appointment. So it was felt, for all that he has a Muslim-sounding name, Karim Khan, that he certainly wasn't on the side of the Palestinians. Worth noting, of course, that he issued an arrest warrant for Vladimir Putin much earlier in Russia's incursion into Ukraine than he has done for Benjamin Netanyahu and Yoav Gallant, and fewer civilian individuals. So he really has taken his time to even begin moving. And today he named Yahya Sinwar, the Hamas chief in the Gaza Strip, and Mohammed Daif, the commander of its military wing, who are considered to be the masterminds of October the 7th, as well as Ismail, leader of the group's political bureau, also wanted for crimes of extermination, murder, hostage-taking, rape, sexual assault, and torture. Now, some of those claims have already been debunked. There isn't any really hard evidence of any rapes being committed. When it comes to torture, well, a number of Palestinian prisoners have been tortured to death in recent months. So I wonder whether they will make the same charges against Netanyahu and but should arrest Netanyahu and Gallant, first of all, expect howls of protest, not just from Israel, but from its supporters in Washington, London, Brussels and Berlin. And also it makes life increasingly difficult for Benjamin Netanyahu to travel. He enjoys particularly going to Washington, and there had been talk of him addressing a joint session of Congress at some point in the near future. He really would not be able to do that if there is an arrest warrant out for him.
Now, Basil, it has crossed my mind that this is maybe just a political move because to protect the independence of the ICC, because, of course, this isn't the actual arrest warrants being put forward. You know, there is no arrest warrant out at the moment. This is just a further step in the process towards that. Because, Basil, if you remember, in the last couple of weeks, we've had seven senators in the United States literally threatening ICC officials and their family members if they go ahead with this. And it all looks very, very like, if the ICC didn't go ahead with this, it would undermine its independence, because Benjamin Netanyahu literally publicly told Joe Biden that make this go away. He didn't use those words, but something along those lines. And then, of course, we had this letter from the seven senators, you know, threatening the ICC officials and their family members. I think the ICC had no choice, even if it, you know, we don't know what's going to happen in this process, whether the arrest warrants are actually going to be issued. But I think it had no choice, because otherwise, what is the International Criminal Court if senators can threaten their family members and it all goes away? What are your thoughts on that, Basil?
Well, the letter by Republican members of Congress was gangsterish. It's the only way of describing it. Officials of the law, particularly international law, but any law official, judge, prosecutor, attorney, etc., should not be the subject of personal threats and intimidation. Yeah. You know, that's literally what gangsters do. So truly abysmal behavior on their part. But, we don't know what they'll be willing to carry out now that a process has been set in motion. I believe the process is that Karim Khan, as the prosecutor, submits evidence to the ICC judges, who then decide whether or not to issue arrest warrants. And then, of course, those warrants have to be followed up and people have to be arrested, which isn't always easy, particularly if they stay in their home fiefdoms, their own countries, where, of course, they control the police and the judiciary and everything else. And there's no chance of Benjamin Netanyahu being arrested in Tel Aviv, I can assure you of that. Khan told CNN this morning, the world was shocked on October the 7th when people were ripped from their homes, from their bedrooms in different kibbutzim. People have suffered enormously. We have a variety of evidence to support the applications we've submitted to the judges. Netanyahu and Gallant, on the other hand, are accused of extermination, causing starvation as a method of war, the denial of humanitarian relief supplies, and deliberately targeting civilians. These acts demand accountability, Khan's office said in a statement. We've yet to see any immediate response from the Israelis, but doubtless they will condemn these moves.
And Basil, what do you think the likely, because look, Putin has had an arrest warrant for him for ages. He's travelled to China. He's travelled to South Africa. You know, what? How likely is it that, you know, if the ICC does issue an arrest warrant for Benjamin Netanyahu and others, that is actually carried out? It's more of a, I think certainly the significance of this is more political, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, Putin wasn't able to go to South Africa for the most recent BRICS summit because as a signatory to the ICC, the South Africans would have been duty bound to arrest him. So he did stay at home for that one. Different matter in China, of course, where the relationship with the Chinese, with Xi, was strengthened by his recent visit to Beijing. I don't know. We are at what I would call a world constitutional crisis, James, of the kind we haven't experienced in our lifetimes. We have Israel, supported by the United States and the United Kingdom, plausibly committing genocide, patently refusing to abide by the constraints that the ICJ has issued. And now we may well have, we should have, based on the evidence that we've all seen live streamed and the words indeed from the mouths of Israeli officials themselves, that, you know, extermination and using extermination as a weapon of war, well, you don't really get many more serious crimes than that, James.
Yeah, we don't. And we're going to leave it there. And if you're watching this, apologies for the technical issues there. We did have I think you froze up a little bit, Basil, but I think we got the main story from you there, Basil. So thank you very much, Basil Valentine, TNT's political editor, for joining us on the Freeman
Report.
Thank
you, James.
Thank you. Right, we're going to take a short break now. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about that Julian Assange case today and the news that he's been granted leave for appeal, which is great news, but it's not the end of the road. I'm going to be talking with Kim Statton. He is film director and founder of Film for Change, and he is the director of the Trust for Julian Assange. So don't go anywhere. We're going to have that conversation straight after this short break right here on TNT.
The challenges our planet's animals are facing sometimes feel a bit heavy.
The animals haven't eaten in a day, 2 days, they haven't drank anything, they're cold, they're dehydrated.
As soon as we started our descent, everywhere I could see was mud, just absolutely mud.
The country has been in prolonged drought so long, it was like a tinderbox waiting to go up.
Okay, very heavy. Each of us wants to be part of the solution, and we can be. Remember that there's good happening right now. At home.
All right, we were able to get into your unit and we have all four of your cats. So,
okay.
And around the world. For any animal in any disaster. So let's focus on that, right? Be part of the solution, one rescue at a time. Search ifa.org/disaster ready.
She was reading at a second grade level in kindergarten.
Pod 4 swimming before she was 7.
Finally convinced mom to get her ears pierced in the 3rd grade.
Came in 2nd at her 5th grade spelling bee.
Drill team in the 7th.
And with one stroke of the keyboard.
One click of the mouse.
It's gone.
It's gone.
It's gone.
a cyber tip today.
You're with James Freeman and the Freeman Report on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Right, as we've heard throughout this show, we have heard from the London High Court now on the Assange case. He has been given leave, granted leave to appeal, which is great news. Fantastic scenes from outside the London court today. But it's not the end of the road. It really isn't. And, you know, I think there's many of us who suspect the process is being used to punish Julian Assange. To talk about all of this, I'm absolutely delighted to be welcoming for the first time on the Freeman Report, Kim Statton. He is a film director and founder of Films for Change, and he directed The Trust for Julian Assange. Welcome to the Freeman Report, Kim.
Thank you very much, James. Thanks for having me.
Kim, obviously we've heard that great news today. Give us your assessment on the news and what your thoughts are on it.
Well, I think today's outcome is, it could be taken as good news. It was pretty much expected by most people that are knowledgeable on this issue. The assurances that the UK court asked the US to provide were not sufficient, especially in regards to his free speech protections, because they stated that he could only seek to apply. In other words, that it would be up to the US court to decide whether he would have these free speech First Amendment protections as an Australian being potentially tried in the US. And so that wasn't sufficient in anyone's language. And so not surprising that the two judges at the UK High Court today decided that they were not sufficient assurances and that they would allow a full appeal on those grounds.
So what are your feelings, if you could sum them up for us on the wing? Because it is kind of, yes, on the one hand, it is good news, but it is kind of just another step in this very, very long road, isn't it?
Yeah, this is a court case that has gone on for 4 years now, more than 4 years, while Julian's been in prison in solitary confinement in a 6 metre square cell for over 5 years. This court hearing, if you could see me, I'd be doing inverted commas right now. It really is a show trial. It's like a pantomime. They've ignored some damning evidence of the CIA and the Mike Pompeo spying on Julian and also plotting to assassinate him, even to poison him, to knock him out in a set-up shootout on the street. We've seen them ignore this evidence of the star witness, Sigurdur Þórðarson, who admitted in a radio interview with a Icelandic newspaper Stundin that he lied in his testimony. All the human rights violations that have been transgressed in the persecution of Julian and many other things. This has all been ignored, and so the only conclusion anyone that has a bit of an insight into this so-called hearing that we can make is that it's a show trial. It's a pantomime, and this is just an extension of that, a continuation of that, a way to drag it out. And if you look at the timeline, it's quite interesting. If you add 6 months from now, which is about the length that we could expect for a full hearing, a full appeal to take place, it takes us neatly 2 weeks past the US elections. So it seems very apparent to me that Biden and the Democrats don't want a multi-award-winning journalist arriving onto the shores of America in handcuffs while they're trying to win the next election.
And what do you make? I'm not a legal expert, and whilst I do follow the case, I don't necessarily know all the insight, but I was really interested. I was listening to the live feed that Stella Assange shared this morning, and I heard lawyers there, they were talking about the case, and they were talking about the fact that this has been presented by the US government in regards to this argument about whether he gets First Amendment rights. And they're kind of questioning that because they're saying, well, he was conspiring against the US government. And the person who was speaking, I think she was a lawyer herself, was saying, well, look, you know, that is what journalism is. You know, investigative journalists conspire with people who have information in governments, information which shows crimes committed by governments, which in a democracy is in the interest of the public for people to know. So they're almost just kind of saying, well, he doesn't have to have that because it's a conspiracy, when actually what they're actually doing there is attacking the heart of journalism.
Yeah, look, the whole basis of this 18-count bogus indictment under an antiquated 1917 Espionage Act, this is where, you know, this whole legal case, this whole extradition hearing is really a distraction from what's at the essence of this, which is that we have a journalist being tried under an act that's more than 100 years old, as if he's a spy. So they're trying to paint a journalist as a spy, a publisher as someone that's trying to steal secrets. But, you know, what's ridiculous about it is that the disclosures of WikiLeaks are crimes. It's revealing corruption, revealing the torture of even teenagers in Guantanamo Bay. War crimes, obvious war crimes, so many examples of that, the Ashaki incident in 2006 and the very famous collateral murder incident, especially the part where they shoot up a van with a father and two kids inside the van who are trying to help people, you know, innocent civilians lying on the street. These are crimes that are being exposed, and the work of Julian can't be described as anything other than journalism. He received information, documented it, checked that the source was accurate, and then published it, and published it through major newspapers, the New York Times, The Spiegel, Le Monde, The Guardian, major newspapers, to benefit us, to benefit the people with this information. So how is this not journalism, and how can a journalist be a spy? The whole setup of this is just nonsense from the start.
It is, isn't it? And it, you know, gets to the heart of whether we actually live in a democracy or not, because democracy functions on free speech. Without that, we don't have a democracy. Now, Kim, you've obviously directed The Trust Fall, Julian Assange, which does detail a lot of the facts on the case. We're going to play that that trailer for that film now. When we come back, I'd like to hear what Australians make of what's going on, what the politicians are saying there. So when we come back from this trailer, if you can give me your opinions on that. So, studio, if you'd like to play the trailer now, please.
This is generally the view of people, though we don't know much about Assange. But you should know, because whether you know it or not, he is fighting for you.
For your courage and leadership and tenacity in journalism and publishing.
Since 2010, Assange has been held in progressively narrower, darker, colder, and crueler spaces.
He has been detained since the 7th of December 2010 in one form or another.
And we are now here after years of imprisonment.
WikiLeaks is a non-state hostile intelligence service.
I think the man is a high-tech terrorist.
A high-tech terrorist.
A traitor, a treasonous.
He has to answer for what he has done.
Assange faces up to 175 years in prison for publishing classified documents exposing U.S. war crimes.
The U.S. government narrative about Julian is a complete fraud. It is a complete fraud from A to Z.
Julian took on the most powerful countries in the world, basically all of them.
We now have confirmed that there were plans to kidnap Julian here in the center of London, or even assassinate him.
No one who instigated that illegal and immoral war has been brought to justice. But the great truth teller sits behind bars.
if wars can be started by lies, peace can be started by truth.
Julian Assange is a hero.
What if everything we thought we knew about somebody was a lie? Would we be willing to go on a new journey of understanding? This is a story of deception, lies, bravery, and a man who risked everything to bring the truth to light.
Mr. Assange shows all the symptoms that are typical for a person that has been exposed to psychological torture over a prolonged period of time.
He looked at me intensely and said, "I hate to say this." He then hesitated, visibly troubled and searching for words. And then he finally said, "Please, save my life."
May future generations have the ability to speak without restraint. May our children and their children know truth and have access to information that leads to justice. Wherever Julian goes, free speech goes with him.
If there is a bird that is about to take flight, stretch her wings and rule the skies, may it be a peace dove and no longer a bald eagle.
If you think Assange is a traitor, he's a rapist, he's a narcissist, he's a hacker, I don't blame you, because you have been deceived. And if you think you've not been deceived, that's normal, because otherwise it wouldn't be deception.
Right. Now, Kim, first of all, thank you for directing that film. I know that your motivation isn't money or anything. How is the film going so far?
Very well. It's been shown in cinemas across Australia, New Zealand, the UK, around 300 cinemas so far, which is fantastic. Probably around 30, 40,000 people have seen the film in cinemas. It's still going 4 months into the theatrical run in these regions, especially in the UK, where it's only been out for about 8 weeks. And the biggest cinema chain in the UK, Odeon, is doing an encore screening on the 4th of June. So a really good chance for people all across the UK to see it at 35 different Odeon sites. People can find those cinemas if they go to thetrustfall.org. They can look up their nearest cinema and get along and see the film.
Well, that is absolutely amazing that the UK's largest cinema chain is showing that. Well done, Kim. And like I said, thank you from everybody at TNT and I'm sure journalists around the world for what you're doing. Kim, what has been the reaction so far from Australian politicians? What's the latest from them?
Well, I think in Australia, you're seeing slowly and progressively that there's more MPs are getting involved with the issue, supporting Assange, uniting together to call for his freedom. There's a parliamentary Friends of Assange group and it has 70 MPs. So I guess it's getting towards half of the parliament is in support of Julian. The current Labor government under Anthony Albanese has sort of shown some vague support, although I think most supporters have found his wording very frustrating, these statements of enough is enough and brought to a conclusion, but no sort of bold, courageous, outward call for his immediate freedom. And it's quite confusing in that FOI documents that have been uncovered, requested and shown have revealed that there's very little conversations between the Australian government and the US, and those very few documents have indicated that the Australian government is actually quite happy for the whole court proceeding to just go through, continue on until Julian is tried and convicted in the US, and then only then, once he's convicted, that he could possibly serve his time back in Australia. And that's not satisfactory at all to any supporter of the work of WikiLeaks and Julian. So what really needs to happen now is for Anthony Albanese to have the courage to just go straight out and demand the immediate freedom of this persecuted journalist.
So it sounds like a very, very political answer there from the Australian Prime Minister, essentially not really putting any pressure on the US, but trying to appear to the Australian public that he is doing something. Kim, sadly, we have run out of time now, but as I'm going to repeat what I said earlier, thank you so much for directing this film and helping to raise awareness. Please do come back on the Freeman Report, as we, you know, it's good news what's happened today, but it is just another step in the process. There's much more to come on this. So, Kim Statton, thank you so much for joining me on the Freeman Report.
My great pleasure, and thanks for covering this important issue.
Thank you. Right, that's it from me today. I'll be back tomorrow. I'll also be, as well as hosting the Freeman Report tomorrow from 12 till 1 o'clock UK time, I'll be on Mudrakers with Rick Munn. So make sure you don't miss that on tomorrow right here on TNT. See you later.